Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. After Tuesday's victory by an upstart member of his chamber, New York State Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says he's ready to work with the next New York City mayor, no matter who it is. Hastie made the comments hours after Democratic Socialist Zoran Mamdani.
I've always, as the Speaker of the Assembly from New York City, I'm a lifetime New York City resident. I've always been, whether it's Mayor de Blasio, Mayor Adams, and of course, who the next mayor will be, I've always been, the best friend or best ally, because I like to be able to go home. I want to be able to be welcomed home. I've always made it a point to be a good steward for the city's interests.
Meanwhile, New York Governor Kathy Hochul is not on board with Mamdani's campaign for mayor, at least not yet. WNYC's John Campbell reports.
Mamdani is poised to win the Democratic nomination once ranked choice ballots are counted, and Hochul is the head of the New York State Democratic Party. But the governor declined to endorse Mamdani's campaign even after Tuesday's primary. She says she wants to talk out their policy differences.
I truly am not focused on the politics. We're 6 months away from Inauguration Day, and that'll determine who I'm working with for the next 4 years.
Mamdani is a self-identified Democratic Socialist from the left wing of his party. Hochul is a moderate. The governor is up for re-election herself in 2026. In Albany, I'm John Campbell for the New York Public News Network.
Meanwhile, turnout topped out at 30% across the state on Tuesday, with some primary voters staying home in record heat. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind with more.
Analysts say turnout in the primary was a mixed bag. Competitive races in New York City, Buffalo, and Albany brought out between 25 and 30% of eligible voters. J.C. Polanco is a longtime political analyst. He says Assemblymember Zoran Mamdani engaged younger people in the five boroughs.
This is a huge generational shift, in the Democratic Party.
Preliminary figures from the Board of Elections show around a million people voted in the city's primary. That's roughly 30% of eligible Democrats. A similar percentage of people came out to vote in Albany. City Auditor Dorcia Pliers is set to become mayor after besting three challengers. Libby Post is a longtime consultant who advised a Pliers campaign.
There's voter apathy, but then there's, if you have the ability to reach people and give them a reason to turn out, they'll turn out.
Turnout was lower in Rochester and Syracuse. Fewer than 20% of voters in those cities went to the polls. In Buffalo, about 25% of voters cast ballots as State Senator Sean Ryan won the Democratic line for mayor. Democrats have a major enrollment advantage in upstate cities, so the primary is akin to a general election. Tim Hofer is part of a nonpartisan group called Unite NY. He says primaries should be open to unaffiliated voters.
So we don't have the participation that's representative already, which is why it's such a big deal to lock out so many more voters.
Democratic leaders say they're skeptical. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
New York State Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie announced $4.5 million in funds for Plattsburgh YMCA renovations during a visit to the facility Wednesday, but he also touched on state and national politics during his annual visit to the North Country. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and filed this report.
The Plattsburgh YMCA is in its third year of a capital campaign to renovate a former health and wellness center on the former Plattsburgh Air Force Base into a state-of-the-art recreation community and wellness facility. In August 2022, Hastie, a Democrat from the Bronx, visited the YMCA's new site and announced $1.3 million in funding for the project. On Wednesday morning, he returned and announced further funding for pool renovations after YMCA CEO Justin Ein gave him a short tour of the pool facilities.
This area here represents about $4.5 million worth of renovations. So the funding that you're giving today is going to go right to this.
And you said the pool renovations itself is $4.5 million?
$4.5 million.
I don't like projects not being finished.
Yeah.
And so if you guys are saying the $4.5 million was for the pool, and I'd rather you guys be able to, you know, just check that box and then move on.
It's fantastic.
Assemblyman D. Billy Jones, a Democrat from the 115th District, later announced the higher funding to a gathered crowd.
Originally, we had said that we were going to give $3 million to the pool area. But after a little tour around here, the speaker has upped that number to $4.5 million he's given to this project.
So. Ein said while the existing building has a pool, it needs significant renovation.
It's going to be quite a transformation when this reopens. The pool itself needs major relining. It's deeper than we need it to be, so we will be doing some major renovations to fill in portion of the pool, but still keeping it at a level that we can still teach our classes and lifeguarding classes and scuba. So there is a lot to go into that.
The money comes from CREST, or Community Resiliency, Economic Sustainability, and Technology Program funds. The YMCA has raised $12.5 million of the nearly $19.5 million total cost to renovate and expand the existing 38,000-square-foot building into a nearly 50,000-square-foot wellness and recreation center. Hasty visited the Rome, New York YMCA on Tuesday and announced $3.4 million in funding for upgrades to the roof and HVAC system there. Hasty was also asked about the local congresswoman. Republican Elise Stefanik of the 21st District is considering a run for governor against Kathy Hochul next year. Hasty says Stefanik is part of GOP leadership in Washington that is making things more difficult for New York.
I think she will have to answer to every single action that the federal government is going to cause us, you know, us to do. And I've been saying this all session. There are seven Republican members of Congress, and the federal government can't do anything to us that they don't allow, to happen. So I think, you know, as she mulls her run for governor, there's questions and votes that she needs to, to answer for.
Michael Oller is also a potential.
Same thing for him.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with Yancey Roy, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday, to talk about the upset in the New York City primary.
Yeah, you know, all along the way, Cuomo was the front runner. And in talking about this race and writing about the race, a few things were kind of clear. You know, folks always want to know, is he going to win? Is he making a comeback? Well, you know, from the moment he jumped in, it was kind of his race to lose because he had such a lead in the polls and name recognition. And there was a sense among some of the people who supported him, even people who might have opposed him in the past, that they needed this tough personality type to be the head of New York City, what was Donald Trump in the White House. But there were some warnings along the way as well, which was that, you know, first of all, you never know how ranked choice voting is going to play out in New York City. It can be sort of a wild card, and that's a system that the rest of the state doesn't have, where you don't just vote for one person, you rank them in order, and there's a way for as the ballot progresses to count those votes is simple way of putting it. So that was one wild card. And then the other wild card was always, would the people who are kind of opposed to Cuomo eventually coalesce to somebody else? And I think the somebody else, people thought that might be Adrian Adams of the city council for a while. But in the end, it ended up being Zoran Mamdani. And as you mentioned, the polls and Cuomo in the lead, one thing you got to know is every time, and it's certainly in New York State and maybe nationally too, is at the end, the polls were fairly even between Mamdani and Cuomo. And even though Cuomo wasn't the so-called incumbent, he was like the known brand, the veteran, that if you get down to the very end, the last few days, and there's a known brand, a person, an incumbent versus a newcomer, and it's fairly even, most times come election day, it's going to break towards the newcomer. There's just sort of, you know, political polling one-on-one. If the leader, the incumbent, is in a dead heat at the very end, that's not usually good for the known person, the incumbent.
Yeah, I wonder what you think about this, because it involves the press and endorsements. It seems like these endorsements, whether it's from a newspaper or it's from another politician, they're not having a big impact at all. I mean, Cuomo received the endorsement of former President Bill Clinton, for example. But it seems like many voters are fed up with the status quo, the same old politics.
Well, it's certainly clear that in this race, there was a push for new faces. There was more energy on the left. There was more, seemed to be more energy in younger voters, and a rejection of Cuomo's, sort of broadly a rejection of the idea of, look, we tried that. Okay, we tried that, so we're going to do something new. And it's interesting because, look, Zoran Mamdani is now poised to become the mayor of New York City. There's still some a general election to come, and there's sort of a couple of wild cards there. But, I mean, it's interesting that he's a guy who's been just a backbencher in the state assembly. You know, he's not been a leader in the state assembly because he's fairly new. But something about his push and his energy certainly captured enough voters in the city to catapult him to where he is now.
That's Yancey Roy, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. U.S. Attorney John Sarcone spoke publicly this week about his brush with danger last week in downtown Albany that received national attention. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas with more.
Sarcone is blaming the Albany Police Department and former President Biden's border policies for creating circumstances that led to last week's alleged knife attack by an undocumented individual from El Salvador. It has become a political flashpoint, with Republicans quick to blame Democrats' immigration policies. Sarcone, a Trump appointee, echoed those calls at an unrelated press conference in Latham Monday. He told reporters, "I know bad when I see it.
I was just standing in front of the Hilton looking straight ahead, and he screamed at me, and I don't turn, and he keeps screaming. And then finally, when I saw him walking towards me, I turned, still didn't say a word, just watching. And then the knife came out, and he went like this, and then charged at me. So it was nerve, I mean, it was frightening. And then I ran, got to the lobby. Before I walked in, he was turned around and was walking away, and that's when I called the sheriff, and I went out to the sidewalk to engage him, to keep him in the area, because I knew that someone was going to be severely injured, if not killed, that night.
According to Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple, Saul Morales Garcia displayed a knife in the area of 40 Lodge Street last Tuesday night. Morales Garcia is facing multiple charges, as his case is slated to move to federal court. Sarcone said Morales Garcia had committed a crime prior to his 2010 deportation, then re-entered the country in 2021 during the Biden administration.
He should never have been on the streets of Albany. Never. This guy should have never been in this country again after having previously deported. So my office had to recuse itself from prosecuting for the reentry into this country illegally, but it will be prosecuted in the Southern District of New York, and I fully expect that this individual will be sent to that hellhole prison in El Salvador to serve his time.
Sarcone, whose father was a police detective in New York City, describes himself as an average citizen with no special self-defense skills.
I'm appalled that there was no police presence around the Capitol. In fact, Albany police never even showed up on the scene. You have the U.S. attorney chased down the street with a knife, knife-wielding maniac, not one call from the chief police, not one squad car pulled up. And thank God I called the sheriff instead of the Albany police, because they should have been there. The legislature was in session, okay? There's a lot of people up in the Capitol, and you've got no police presence at all. Disgraceful.
Albany Police Chief Brendan Cox tells WAMC he wasn't aware Sarcone was the victim of a crime until he was contacted by another agency the following day.
At some point during the evening, we were notified. We weren't notified who the victim was. Our people attempted to say they would certainly take over. It happened in our city, and we were told it was being taken by the sheriff's department. They have jurisdiction throughout the entire county.
Sarcone spoke Monday after a press conference he held with federal officials announcing 13 arrests related to a New York City-based drug trafficking ring, which involved Capital Region residents. Federal agents seized large quantities of cocaine, methamphetamine, cash, and cannabis. Frank Tarantino is special agent in charge of DEA's New York division.
We're making some significant inroads into the fentanyl supply chain and the entire illicit supply chain. We're seizing record numbers of drugs all across the United States. The DEA and all of our partners are doing a great job working both top-down and bottom-up type investigations, data-driven, intelligence-led investigations that are really going after the cartels.
Authorities say the co-conspirators moved drugs from California to sell in New York. For his part, Sarcone blamed weak state laws and even weaker state legislators from New York City for allowing criminal organizations to proliferate.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. President Trump's big, beautiful budget bill in Congress would not just slash federal spending on Medicaid. It would also bar Medicaid reimbursement to Planned Parenthood. Already, federal law prevents Medicaid from paying for abortions, but the big, beautiful bill would prohibit any Medicaid reimbursement to nonprofits that receive more than $800,000 in federal funds in 2023. And that are, quote, primarily engaged in family planning services, reproductive health, and related medical care, end quote. Planned Parenthood President Alexis McGill Johnson says that effectively singles them out. Planned Parenthood served more than 2 million patients nationwide last year, with some offices already struggling after the Trump administration excluded them from Title X funding in March. Johnson says the reconciliation bill could cause nearly 200 of its clinics, a third, close. She spoke with the Legislative Gazette's Jesse King.
It would mean that nearly 200 Planned Parenthood health centers in about 24 states would be at risk of closure, and more than 90% of those health centers, those closures, would be in states where abortion is actually protected and legal. So in many ways, not only would the impact of this bill passing mean that, you know, so many patients would be limited in their access to birth control, to STI testing and treatment, to breast cancer screenings and wellness exams, it would also mean that in those states where abortion is legal, that there would be fewer appointments available, there would be fewer providers available, and that would impact, again, the ongoing public health crisis as it relates to the world post-Dobbs.
You mentioned, I think you said, 24 states, and not all of them currently restrict abortion. Tell me more about the locations here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that when you look at how the states that have been able to take advantage of Medicaid as as a broad insurer in their communities, many of those states are states that have expanded access to healthcare under the Affordable Care Act. There are many of the states that really prioritize ensuring that their constituents have a broad, wide-ranging access to care across the board. So that's going to be, you know, states like California and New York and Illinois and Michigan. And, you know, and while there is Medicaid access all across the country in many states, it does feel that in particular, the way this provision is designed is to really go after the Planned Parenthoods that are in states with abortion access.
Well, obviously, as you noted, you know, Planned Parenthood does more than just abortions. How would these closures impact your patients?
Well, look, I mean, we're already in a precarious time, right? You know, healthcare in general is in a precarious time. We have been at minimum since COVID, and then you layer on the Dobbs decision, and then you layer on these attacks on Medicaid defunding, and you know, we have obviously a lot of services that Planned Parenthood provides. When you start to take away health centers and the provision of care, it means that people may delay their care longer or seeking access to care until they can travel longer distances in order to get that. It may mean that they may not forego all care altogether, right? And so, you know, we have like a state like Georgia, for example, which has, you know, about only half of the counties in Georgia have an OBGYN. And Planned Parenthood sits kind of at the intersection of being able to fill the gaps inside of a broken healthcare system. And you start to chip away at access and their ability to use their insurance to pay for that care. And you will see, you know, increases in things like the maternal mortality rate. You will see increases in STI rates. You will see increases in HIV rates because people are going to delay or be prevented from getting the care that they need.
I mean, from your perspective, what is the outlook? Does Planned Parenthood have options to oppose the loss in funding going forward?
Well, right now the bill is in the Senate. And so it's important right now that while we feel that obviously so much is happening, that the power is still with the people. And we know that the majority of Americans do not want to see Trump or Congress take away funding for birth control or take away funding for cancer screenings or STI testing. And they really don't want politicians to be involved in personal medical decisions like abortion. So the way you let them know that is by calling them, by writing them, by sending them emails. These are things that lawmakers pay attention to. How loud is their constituency as it relates to an issue? Because it knows, it helps them understand the impact of how they will be held accountable when they take a vote. So calling your U.S. senator, demanding that they vote no on the budget reconciliation bill that defunds Planned Parenthood, telling them that you are opposed to the deep cuts in Medicaid that could impact rural hospitals, it could impact the number of residents and providers that are trained on Medicaid, that could impact the benefits that, you know, low-income children need just to, you know, get a decent meal at school. All of the things that are under attack that really help keep communities whole and safe, you know, any kind of attacks on those items, people need to let their senators know that that's not acceptable, that they cannot do that in their name as a constituent, and that they urge them to vote no.
From your view, has, I guess, the country's abortion debate or the landscape around it changed in the months since President Trump returned to office?
Yeah, I don't know that the debate has changed. I think that the consolidation of power has changed. You know, abortion has actually been quite a uniting factor among the majority of Americans, as we have seen in ballot initiative after ballot initiative. When people are allowed to vote directly on whether or not they want to preserve or even expand abortion access, they overwhelmingly vote in support of securing their reproductive freedom. What has changed over the years has been the capture and consolidation of power of state houses and judges by anti-abortion politicians and jurists. And in that regard, you know, again, it requires the people to stay vigilant to ensure that they are voting and holding these electeds accountable for the decisions that they are making that are completely counter to where the people sit. So, you know, I see an expansion of abortion public opinion in many ways. I see a broader understanding of how abortion bans have made pregnancy more dangerous, and a greater understanding of the abortion care that is needed in miscarriage management. And I think people are connecting the dots on, you know, the fact that we are at much greater risk with fewer rights, and that we need our elected officials to stand a lot stronger in defending our rights and freedoms.
That's Planned Parenthood President Alexis McGill Johnson speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Jesse King. And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2526. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.